So we would bring a 35 in. We would bring our 35, right? Because we knew we had it. Yeah, it sucks carrying the thing, but it's ours and we can throw it up there and everybody knows that it's ours. But when you're walking up and the chief is looking for somebody to put to work, that 35 is your ticket in the door, right? You bring that 35 up, hey, drop that, go inside. We need to search upstairs.
Nice.
Okay? And then whoever else shows up without a ladder, they can be great.
Firehouse Vigilance presents the Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. It is Weekly Scrap number 76. Tonight's guest is Sean Donovan, Boston Fire, 19 years, with 15 years on a truck, company, or heavy rescue. From firefighter to company officer, he is currently a lieutenant on Rescue 1 in downtown Boston. And even though he is a truckie, it's going to be an exciting conversation here on the Weekly Scrap. So he teaches a class called Laddery Goodness, as well as working with Real World Firefighting, who is scheduled to be at the next FDIC whenever that the world allows that to occur. Sean Donovan, it is my pleasure to have you on today as the guest of Weekly Scrap number 76. Welcome, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Everyone watching live, if you have questions for Sean or myself, please do not hesitate to throw them at us. We would love to hear them. And let's get it going. People are already chiming in. Craig Bouchard said, up late, Sean. So are you early to bed guy?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Are you keeping you up past your bedtime?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Fair enough.
After nighttime, yeah.
All right. Well, I will get straight to it and get straight into a class you teach, which I love the name, Laddery Goodness. Talk to it about how, where it came from, what it's about, and go from there. And we'll start easy questions.
So I think Laddery Goodness came from the need to have something in the class that was different and maybe even stupid to identify it, separate it from all the other classes. It wasn't trying to be like any sort of a cool name or anything like that. It was just, you know, we put out stuff, write articles or whatever, and we would see the stuff pop up somewhere else. I mean, it's just the nature of the business. There's not really a lot of things to talk about, not a lot of real new angles to look at it. You know, everything that's new has been done by somebody before. That's just, I mean, the business has been around for hundreds of years, you know? And I started throwing the laddery goodness in there because of Mike Dowling, who said I needed a hashtag on this stuff if it was going to get it to spread, if people were going to tag me and stuff. And I thought the whole idea was quite stupid. And because it was stupid, I did it. So that's where the Laddery Goodness came from. And then I kind of spread that with the Twitter. And I think when I was writing with Firefighter Basics, we put it in there a lot. But every time we see some pictures of some people doing good work with ground ladders at incidents, we'd throw the Laddery Goodness on there.
Gotcha.
Just so we could find it, you know?
Sure. No, absolutely. We've got Real World Firefighting. What do you do with that? How'd you get involved with them?
I've only ever wanted to hang out with my friends. I never really wanted to teach anything. So I went to a few conferences. I think the first one was like, I think Firehouse Expo in Baltimore when I was like 4 or 5 years on. I met Marcus Bush. He helped me out because my department wasn't mandating hoods at the time.
Oh, wow.
So I guess I'm going way back, but I was doing a live
fire. Showing your age.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I didn't have a hood for this live fire class. And Marcus Bush just came out of nowhere, and he's like, nobody was believing me that I didn't have a hood. I felt like kind of an ass. And he's like, oh, I got you, brother. Where you work up Northeast? I was like, yeah. And so this dude I never met gave me a hood, and he ended up bringing me into Firefighter Basics. And just going to conferences, I met all these dudes that I wanted to hang out with that, you know, like-minded, like having a good time. And we figured the only way that we could get together, because we all have families, is to teach a class. So we came up with a class, and everyone came up with, we tried to put in for a lecture at FDIC too, I think. And it just kind of blossomed from there. So now we do a bunch of traveling classes. We get, you know, individual department stuff. I think the last 3 years I've been gone all of April every year. It's just great fun with these guys. So my part of real world is, just doing ladders. We just do one or two person throws. If there's enough people, we'll have somebody else do a lines over ladder station. But I just do simple throws with people, And I just try to get them to think a little bit differently about ladders and what their department makes them do.
Sure.
And if we get a chance, then I always ask if there's something that they want to do that the department doesn't let them do, because, you know, we're here in a class, like, let's do it. Let's do all the things that are no-nos at your department. And if it's not going to get somebody seriously hurt, then we'll do it.
Right on. So are you a ground ladder expert? Was that what you would classify, or ground ladder instructor is your forte?
I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. Okay. I've had dudes show up to classes and run circles around me with ladder skills, ladder information, ladder everything. Like, okay. I just like the art of laddering, I guess we could say.
Well, I was going to ask about Alkalite and Duo safeties and where you fell on the two. If you had a preference. We're just finding out there's a difference, you know. That's how behind the eight ball I am. So,
I guess I don't really have a preference, because if we've always got whatever manufacturer, whatever they came with. We never spec'd a vendor. So if you got Pierce, they're from Florida, so they come with the duos, right? Is that it? Right? Have this backwards?
Dude, believe me, I don't. You were asking the wrong guy.
Well, no, E1 is from Florida. Pierce is Wisconsin, and I think Alkalite's in Wisconsin, so I think that's how that goes.
Okay.
So they just put whoever's vendors are closest on their apparatus, because we never spec that. So.
No, I just didn't know there was a difference till recently, and I was blown away by the weight difference. And so anyway.
Yeah.
Jacob Johnson chiming in said, throwing ladders and forcible entry, the two most underrated needed skills on the job today. Hard to argue with that. Reese Eastham says, I love ladders. Marco Rodriguez is saying, hi, guys. And Tony Nunez chiming in and says, what's up from the 850? The 850 firefighter. I'll be down there in a couple days, so I'm excited. Have you tried splicing ladders with webbing? So that's Marco Rodriguez chiming in with a question for you. Have you tried splicing ladders?
Have you had OJ Kaloji on here yet?
Not yet.
Oh, you got to get him. Okay. Magic City, that's his thing. And when he was starting his... Dark Side of Ladders, I think. We talked a lot about this stuff, splicing ladders, and he's trying to get his own. I don't know if he's calling it a Pompier ladder, but pretty much a Pompier ladder back.
Rescue hook ladder that goes up one.
Yeah, and it's you know, everyone's afraid of them, and it's just that kind of the way the fire service has gone, that we're afraid of things we don't use, and so we try to get rid of them. And there's no reason to be afraid of these ladders. There's no reason to be afraid of splicing ladders, like OJ talks about. It's not something I've done. But I definitely want to do it, and I want to get in on his class again. I think I helped him teach once. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, we were down in Alabama. We worked together at least. I don't know if I was working with him or if we just happened to hang out together. But sure. But splicing ladders is his thing, and I definitely want to go through his class.
Right on. I do a little class on the Shoulders of Giants is what it's called, but it talks about the Buell Building in Detroit, where they spliced to that, I want to say the
bucket.
Well, they were just coming up like 12 feet short, and they ended up taking a stick up there on top of the stick and lashing it together with belts. It's pretty impressive because it's like 1983, I want to say. And there's some old grainy black and white photos of it, and it's pretty cool. So anyway, that's when I first heard of splicing ladders. Okay, catching you up. Duos all day. That's from Trenton Slattery. Zachary Taylor says, Duo is in Wisconsin and come on the pier. So there you go. There's the matchup. Yeah. Duo safety is the way to go. We were really close. So
had all the right words.
Right. Sean Duffy's asking, do you teach bridging in your class? I've noticed that people seem to have gotten away from it.
I don't, but I don't see a problem with it. I think I like to read a lot of old books about this stuff, and I think the last thing I saw was like 1/3 is kind of the rule of thumb.
So for people who don't know, what is bridging exactly? So Jacob Johnson and Sean Duffy both, go ahead.
So going from one building to another, if you've got a ladder with you, you can throw it across and just walk across or crawl across if you're into that. But it's just a way to get between two buildings or two high points, I guess. You don't want to go down and move to another building.
Really just exactly like it sounds.
Yeah, right. And around here, we can jump from roof to roof if we can't walk them sometimes. And by jump, I mean it's like a foot apart. So nobody's going for long distance jumps or anything.
Not the rescue me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I may have made a mistake when I was a new guy and went up on the wrong roof and had to jump across.
Marco, what is OJ's name or class name / website? Someone's asking. If you know, that's great. If not, I'm just throwing questions.
Yeah, Magic City Truck.
Magic City Truck Academy?
Yeah.
There you go. Aaron Johnson said, I saw Sean's presentation at Portland Firemanship 2017. Fantastic presentation. Nice to see him again.
Oh, God, I was so sick, man. Well, I appreciate that. I was sick. I think I was sitting down in the audience, like three hoodies on.
Just trying to make it through.
Yeah, now, it was great. It was a great time. If you get a chance to go to that one, those guys are great.
I've not been to Firemanship, but all I hear is just wonderful things about it, man. I can't wait to go.
Yeah. Yeah, they do a great job.
All right. Getting back to my notes here. The topic you wanted to discuss today was getting value out of drills. So I'm going to throw that at you. Getting value out of drills, what did you mean by it? And go for it.
Yeah, I think so getting value out of the drills, there's the whole, going through the, we can say the NFPA standard or whatever you want and checking every little checkbox on there, and it's hilarious watching guys dance to this dance card that they got since they were probies, and then, they come to our class and you'll see them throw the ladder up and yell overhead obstructions and then throw the ladder against the building and they never actually looked up, and it's like, well, why are you saying that? So I'll always go straight after them for that. Well, why, what are you yelling things for if you're not going to do it? Are you just, you're doing it for everybody else? And, I think like Harrisburg, PA, they have, if you go to their conference, it's really great. Their chief, Edling is great, but, they've got ropes up like telephone lines in front of their firm building.
Nice.
So if you say overhead obstructions and then you throw the ladder without looking, you're going to get tangled up in that. It's pretty cool addition to their prop, but it's stuff like that. It's, we're doing exactly what the instructions say and we're not moving on from there, and I like to say, compared to driving, I'm sure you guys drive a little bit differently than we do up here, but we all have the same driver's license that fits in the same. I can drive there, you can drive here. All these things are the same. But I think if you come up here, you're going to find it challenging, we'll say. But the driver's ed book is essentially the same. All these set rules that you're supposed to do, but after you've been driving for 30 years, you don't drive like a new guy. Once you've been doing this long enough, there's things that you just do automatically. You don't have to say them out loud. You don't have to say them for somebody else's approval. You do the things that get it done that aren't wasting your time, I guess. And I don't think I have a real specific thing, but I just see guys going through drills and they have to label every piece of equipment, and I always have a problem with that because I'm not good with numbers. I'm not good with details. Even now in the tech rescue setting, I always run into numbers problems. I don't know what the strength is on that, but I know that thing's weaker than that thing. So that's the one that I'm worried about. And then somebody else can label every single part of every single piece of equipment, but they just can't use it.
Sure.
Or if it's not laid out exactly how it was in that one class they did, they can't use it. No. So my idea is that if we can do something, not the craziest way, but some way that's kind of off the wall, but viable, like sounds like something we might have to do. If we can do that in training, then we'll be able to do it for real in the real world if we had to.
Nice, nice. I like it a lot. No, it makes complete sense. And it's kind of that technical, that book knowledge versus that real world application.
Yeah. And I think somebody said once that if you only have all knowledge is theoretical until it's applied. So if you've only read about something or studied about it, like you don't know if that information is real or not. You don't know if that information has value until you've tried to use it. People come to our class and there's stuff that doesn't work for them. That's how it goes. Like you can't go to a class that's going to fit, your department where one dude shows up and drives a truck and 30 people meet you there. So you got to find what works for you. And, coming from my department where there's a boss and three guys on every truck, or New York where they have one in like 50 people on every truck, right? It's different tactics that don't work, but it's all from the same book, but it just doesn't work like that. So was that rambling enough?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll get better. We'll get better at the rambling because that's what makes the scrap so great is we just ramble. let me catch you up. OJ, I'm can you pronounce it? Kalajic?
Yeah, good luck.
Okay.
It sounds the way it's spelled.
OJ, I'm sorry. I tried to get it right. He said you're one of the absolute best firemen and dudes out there.
OJ said that?
That's what he said. I don't know if he's talking about you or someone in the chat, so I'm assuming you. So. Sean Duffy talked about Jacob Johnson says he got taught bridging back in 2004 when he first started. Such an awesome useful ladder, but sadly it's not being taught much anymore. And then Zachary Taylor was saying Louisville Fire still bridges from the aerial to the drill tower as part of their drill school. So that's kind of cool hearing about that.
I love it. You know, it's this risk aversion thing that's kind of building. You know what I mean?
Sweeping.
It's all up and down the chain of command. It's and I think it goes back to the way I open my class is I start with a picture of the guys I worked with when I got to Rescue One when I had like 5 years on. I had no business getting the spot, but it was seniority based and nobody else put in for it. So
nice.
It was me or the bag of salt, and I had a pulse, so I won, you know?
Right on. I like that.
And to say they hated me is putting it mildly. They were brutal. I think the second junior guy to me on my group was 30 years in. So wow. You can see how that would have worked out.
Sure.
But I start with that, and I learned from these guys who, you know, they got hired before I even was even born. You know, these guys got hired in the early 70s, and they forgot more about fire than I'll ever read anywhere, you know? And they had a hard time training me because they saw me as a threat, as like I was taking something from them. And I was taking all the knowledge I could, but I had to get it secondhand, and I had to fight them for it, for a good part of the time. Eventually they loosened up, but, I show that picture of all these old dudes that all retired within 5 years of me leaving the company. And then I show my group at Ladder 4 when I was there. And I think, I was at probably 13 or 14 years. And then my senior man was 8 years. So, and that was the senior guy on the group besides me. And I said, what happened here? You know what I mean? And it's, we just had an experience dump, you know? And I think a lot of departments are seeing this,
mm-hmm.
but the bigger problem that I see there is that we haven't identified it. And if you don't identify it, you can't deal with it. So we're losing, you know, we lose all this experience, and we were hiring 100 guys a year for 8 years. I mean,
wow. There's massive turnover.
Is that 8,000? No, 800. Yeah.
800,
so
yeah.
But our average experience from when I got on was probably 25 years. And now it's probably, 8 or 9 years.
We're experiencing the same thing. We've had such a massive turn. We had three battalion chiefs all with 35 plus all leave, you know, within a period of 2 years, roughly. And then the progression down from there, the majors that left, the captains and lieutenants, was unreal, the turnover.
Yeah, and they take their experience mm-hmm. with them, and they take their, you know, how they operate with them, and then you get. And I don't want anybody to think I'm attacking anyone. I'm not. It's just the nature of the beast is you get somebody with less experience that gets into these positions, you know, where they're in the position to make calls on training and tactics, and they have hesitation because they haven't seen it done. You know, they haven't seen the work happen, and rightfully so. But we're not teaching it, and we should be teaching these tactics instead of saying, well, that's too dangerous. We're not going to do that.
Right.
You know, we should be finding a way to make the stuff work to give our guys more options.
And that's where the importance of these conferences is so vital, that you can get to the micro conferences, the mini conferences, as well as the giant conferences, and catching the Magic City Truck Academies, the Lattery Goodness, the Real World Firefighting, you know, all of these. So risk aversion is killing progression, from Kevin Morgan.
He's right.
Cody Eastman says, I have seen it. Oh, he's talking about bridging. He learned it from the old guys on his volunteer department, but has never had a class on it. Valerie Marshall Solano asks, how do you mitigate the loss? And I'm assuming she's talking about the experience that's retiring out the door.
I don't know. My department hasn't done it. And again, I don't want to point at my department and say we're doing it wrong. I'm just saying we don't know what to do. And I think that we're doing what we can, you know, learning from the guys that are retiring as best we can. But I've heard of other departments that hire guys back as like mentors. You know, they do some sort of like part-time work teaching new officers. I think like a mentor program is great. You get an old experienced chief or something to respond to every call with a new chief.
Ooh,
just to help him make calls and just teach him, you know, not really hold his hand, let him do his thing. Cause that's like, I mean, that's a big part of what I like to do with my drills, you know, it's the same thing. Hey, let him go, let him work, you know, let him talk about it afterwards. Hey, you know, you're doing this, you know, maybe how'd that work out for you? You know, did it work good? Did it work bad? You know, hey, watch for this next time, you know, just a little mentor thing, not second guessing the chief or, you know, the company officer, but I think with our, we do like a 2 week thing. That's it for our new officers. It's, you could actually go from lieutenant to acting chief in a week. You know, you get promoted to the captain, and then you're promoted to captain, and then you're in charge of the district because the chief is out, and you just have to be the captain working that day. But I think like a mentor program is probably the best thing I could come up with on how to capture that experience while it's on the way out.
No, I love that. And I'm not sure which guest on the Scrap was talking about inviting those retired guys back to the training ground to teach, you know, and run drills and tap into that.
One thing we have that's great is at our fire academy, which is on Moon Island, we've got an office trailer set up. We call it the Liars Club. And every Wednesday, the retirees come down and they have coffee and donuts and rehash all their old ward stories, you know.
Nice.
And I loved it when I was teaching at the fire academy. I would go down and sit in there with those guys and talk to them and pick their brains and learned a lot from those dudes. And I feel like that, you know, they're right there. They're a resource. We could actually just send somebody down and just take notes, just talk to them, just ask questions, just get the stuff that we never knew or that was never written down. I think I tried to send you a video, videos, but one of them was from America's Test Kitchen, and the guy, Chris, I can't think of his name, but they were putting on a 12-course Victorian meal. So, you know, got to talk about food. But it was from 1890, and they had to make this meal. They had to set this all up, and they were going to set out this 12-course meal for, you know, local celebrities and news folks. And so they had all these good chefs from the area helping out with this. And he says, like, he just threw this quote off, you know, like just the back of his hand, not even thinking about it. But he said, you know, we ran into problems because the recipe would say to make something and we would make it and it wouldn't come out right. She was doing something different when she was making that recipe than we're doing now. And it's not working out the same. And it was something like, we didn't, you know, like we've heard before, like we didn't know what we didn't know.
Right.
Things that she thought it wasn't important enough to write down because it's just something everybody does in 1890. It's just something everybody does. They're trying to redo the thing now, to try to redo the meal now. And there's 500 words of description missing from this recipe.
Right.
And I kind of feel like that's what's going on with us, is there stuff that wasn't written down because everybody knew it.
Right. Just what they did. And it's just walking around knowledge.
We shouldn't have to tell you that. You should know that, you know?
No, I want to go down there with a camera to the island whenever they have these little meetings. Just record, man. Just record and then put them out there. That'd be phenomenal. Just soak up.
Follow Billy Noonan. He tweets about him all the time.
just soak up that old knowledge and put it out there. I think that'd be a phenomenal show. I'd watch it. Reese Eastham said, having an open-minding instructor helps. Ask questions and hopefully you have an instructor with a let's try it attitude, which you were talking about earlier. So
yeah, that's probably like I won't say, I'll say I don't know and I'll follow that right up with, hey, if we got time, let's give it a shot.
Right.
You know,
let's find out.
What's going to happen? What am I going to look stupid? Come on. I got that mastered, you know?
No, I love that. I really do, man. So how do you frame it when you were trying to generate buy-in? You have your crew or whatever you're in charge of instructing and you have a new drill you want to run. What's kind of your mindset, your process? Or
I try to get buy-in from one of the members first. Like I try to, you know, outnumber the naysayers, I guess is way to look at it. I could just come in and lay the hammer down because I'm the boss. We're doing this.
Right.
You know, I just hate everything about that approach. And I don't like being the boss anyways. You know, I like being part of the crew. That's why I like being a company officer, because I get to work. You know, I'm not administrative guy. I'm not the guy that sits in the car. I got to work with my guys. So if there's a new drill or something I want to try, I usually start with, hey, I want to try this, you know. And if I can try it with one guy, then I can try it with the whole group. If I try it with one guy and it's just not working out, then I'll probably shelf it for a while and come back later. The crew I have now, all I got to do is show them a picture and they're going to be like, all right, we're going to try this.
Let's next do this. Shift. Right.
Yeah. I'm going to bring this stuff in and we're going to do this. And
but you've built that, built that environment for that, right? You fostered that, built it, encouraged.
Yeah. But it takes the right guys too. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't work in a vacuum, you know, you know, when I worked on Ladder 4, we're doing 25 runs a day. Nobody wants to do training and I don't blame them. I don't want to make them do training because I feel like I'm taking away from their time, you know? So what the best we could do there was when we're at something is do something quick while we're there. You know, hey, let's just do this real quick. We're here. Let's do this real quick before we go. And my general rule for drills across the board, everywhere I've worked, is no more than an hour. You know, we'll give it an hour, right? If we don't figure it out, I'm good. You know, give it an hour. If you guys like it, we're good. But it's only the first hour is mine. You know, I started this off. If we make it through the first hour, whatever. You know what I mean? But where I'm at now, it turns out like the first hour, like I get the first 10 minutes and then they steal it from me. And now we're off doing some other version of it. And before you know it, it's lunchtime and they haven't had enough yet. So we had to come back after lunch. You know,
often
that's not me. That's not mine. You know, that's they want to do more and I'm not going to stop them. You know, so that's kind of how it goes. I have had problems, you know, like who wouldn't, you know, like you're not going to be everybody's, you know, everybody's hero, you know, not everybody's going to like you. That's the nature of it, you know? But I would always, you know, if we just make it through the first hour, just show up, watch what we're doing. You know, if you don't like it, see you later. I'm not going to force you to do this stuff, but if we have to do this for real and you make us look bad, then we're going to have a problem, you know? And that's, you know, one of my, we've only got like three rules that matter for me on shift. And like, number one is don't make the company look bad.
Like it. What's the other? Can I ask the other? I'm writing down. Don't make the company look bad.
they're kind of variations. So it's okay. Don't make us look bad. Don't complain. I can't remember what number three is because it's only the first two are the ones that settle everything else.
Pretty much know? Lock it up. Okay.
Yeah. Complaining is cancer. You know,
100%.
Doesn't stop. Oh, I think it's treat everybody like family you don't like.
Treat everyone like family.
No, family you don't like. Because like, they're still okay. Your family. You still got to do it. You don't have to enjoy it.
Oh, okay. All right. Treat everyone like family you don't like. Got it. Don't make the company look bad. Don't complain. Treat everyone like family that you don't like. Has the caveat on there.
So yeah.
Not treat right. Everyone like your grandma that you love.
No, God, no. No, it's not going to happen. I mean, for example, like... working at Fort Dudley, it was probably 7 overdoses a day minimum. You know what I mean? And you could see where that would generate an attitude, you know, a mentality among the men. And it's tough. You know, it's tough doing the same thing a lot for somebody that you're just going to come back and take care of again later.
Right.
You know, you get burned out.
Sure.
And it happens. But it's, you know, yeah, I get it. Like, we'll find some way to work around this. You know, maybe we'll get you to another firehouse for a couple of days or something to cool down. But like, don't do anything that's going to make us look bad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know what's going on. We know what we're going there for. Don't act like it's a surprise. You know, don't get all mad because that's what you're here for, and you don't have to be here. You know, so it was big crew management on that aspect, but. You know, it just comes down to that. Don't complain. Don't make us look bad.
Love it, you know? Man. I love it. I love the rules, man. I really do. I'm going to talk about that because that little mindset shift, you know, I've heard, you know, treat everyone like your grandma, you know, like how you'd want your mother treated. But I've never heard the treat everyone like a family you don't like. So I like that caveat. Kevin Morgan said, feed your firefighters. Foster an environment for growth. Educate them. Empower them to make decisions. Direct them as needed. So solid set there. We've got Dave LeBlanc chiming in. He said, I would rather be a brake pedal than a throttle. And then
yeah.
He's quoting you because he attributed that quote to Sean Donovan.
Yeah, that was
welcome, Chief.
I had a great crew on Ladder 4, and the toughest thing was making them stop. You know, we get a lot of good first two fires over there. You know, you paid for them dearly with all the medical calls and all the other nonsense. But we had a lot of good fires, and it's whoa, stop. There's other companies coming. You know what I mean? Like, we got the search done. We got the forced entry. We found the fire. Let the engines do something. You know, like, we're still going to have to go do 20 runs after this. You know, yeah, all the work is for us. And that was kind of another rule of mine was if there's work to be done, it's my company that gets it.
Nice.
You know, my job as an officer to get work for my company. But the problem with those guys was they would never stop. You know, and that's great. It's a great problem to
have. Great problem to have, yes. Moving through, pulling the notes back up. Here we go. Challenges of realism and relevance And so, obviously, with live fire, it's very, very tough to have realism in training, drilling, or anything. But also, when doing ladders or rescue or just basically drilling in general, how do you overcome those challenges?
So, where I'm at now, if my guys have a question on something, I just start making phone calls. You know, like we got the duck boats. I don't know if you've ever seen those, the tour boats that come through the city. It's like a 2-hour tour around the city, and they go out in the Charles River too. So
okay,
they're
okay.
You know, land and water.
Right.
And somebody was asking about, oh, do those propellers spin all the time? And I said, I don't know. Why don't we call them up and ask, you know? So I managed to get a hold of the duck tour people, and they're like, do you want to have a tour of the thing? I'm like, well, yeah. So they brought one to the firehouse, and we climbed all over that thing. They showed us all the stuff about it. And yes, the wheels are always turning, not the propellers.
Okay.
And then they invited us over to lift one of them up at their shop, which hasn't materialized yet. Now I got to ask, what was the question?
Basically, challenges, overcoming the challenges of realism and relevance, and you know.
Oh, yeah. So well, that's the realism and relevance right there. Is that's something that has had accidents in the city. You know, they've had fatal accidents, and nationwide. They have a pretty good safety record, but they have sunk and they have killed people by sinking. So if somebody had questions, we did it. But all the other stuff is, if we're doing something that requires like braking, I want something to break. You know, we had a 30-yard dumpster in the firehouse. We had some big, you know, like spring cleaning that we did. We had a 30-yard dumpster there. And we took our rescue mannequin and I just bound him up in there as best I could. I dropped it on his legs. I shoved his arm inside the door, you know, and I tied the door shut as best I could with some junk rope.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, there he is, you know, and whoever the first fire, you know, I hit it from the guys when I was doing it. And I was like, oh, I got something for you guys after coffee. And so we come back and there he is, you know, he's all tangled up. And so we go to get him out. And I was like, let's use the airbags and pop the door open. And like, just remember, right, if we're going to break something, there's going to be a reaction. You know, when you let go of pressure, something happens on the other end. You know, it doesn't just give way gently, like even like cutting a roof, right? The wood falls. And so we tied the door back and we pushed it. We got the arm out. And I was like, well, that's no fun. Like, we got to break the rope. I don't care about his arm. We're here to break the rope.
Right. You know?
And so I wanted that part of something failing to see what that door did. And that door exploded and we had it tied back. We thought we had it tied back good, but it still popped open like 2 feet when that rope exploded.
Oh, wow.
And it was great because everybody got to see it. Everyone's seen what happened and it didn't cost us a dime. Right. You know, we didn't break any equipment. We didn't lose any hardware or anything like that. You know, we lost like 4 feet of rope or whatever it was. And it was just like utility rope. It wasn't like the heavy duty rope.
Sure.
But you can't fake that. You can't say, oh, well, I would capture. And, you know, that's the biggest thing. If somebody brings in the pretend part, like, oh, no, we would make sure we do this. Like, oh, we would. Well, why aren't we doing it now?
Right.
Because that's a hazard we have to work around. I think I backed one of our support trucks over Randy. And I tied rebar around his legs and then backed the truck up over him. And I'm like, oh, look, there's Randy, you know. And they go, well, I would put a tourniquet on him. I'm like, well, let's do it.
Right.
You know, like. Dude, that was the hardest part of the whole operation was trying to get a freaking tourniquet on this guy because I parked the truck too high up on his leg.
Nice.
You know, and I'm like, well, next time I set this up, I'm not going to go that high.
Right. Learning from each one.
But it was hard to put the tourniquet on. And if I wouldn't have done that, well, don't say that. Don't say you're going to. Let's actually do it because we got tourniquets right over there. Let's throw it on there.
Right.
Something as simple as that just made everything harder. But it's something that we could do. So if we could get the realism in there, then we'll do it. I mean, even when we talk about lifting and moving people, right? How high do you have to lift somebody to prove that whatever lift you're going to do works? Knee high, right? We don't need to get somebody out of a window to get the same effect, right? We just had to get them over something, right? And if we got a ladder, like we got a little clubhouse in the firehouse that we're still trying to get it up to the safety standards for the department so we can use it. But it's like 5 or 6 feet off the ground and it's got a window and we can do everything ladder related from that because it's a window above ground. And we have to work from a ladder and push him out and make sure he doesn't fall. So
nice, nice. And what was it you said? If it's supposed to break, let's break something. What was that
quote? Yeah.
Did I get it right?
If what we're doing entails breaking something, then we need something to break. You know, we got the roof hook. Some people would call it an FDNY hook, right? But, you know, Boston, New York, you can't, you know. So the roof hook, And it's like, oh, when you're prying things, you know, here's a good way to pry things. You can pull up decking with this. It's pretty cool. You can stand up like a gentleman and pull stuff apart. And so it's like, oh, that seems good. You know, and then they like pick up a dumpster or something with it, you know, kind of just bend it and like, you know what, let's go to this place. I know there's a pile of pallets. Let's just go pry some pallets apart. You know, like if you're trying to practice breaking something, break something. Pallets are universal. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
You can use them for chopping a roof. You can use them for prying on things. Like, well, so let's go do it. Let's go break something. Let's see what it actually feels like when you pull a little bit too hard and the thing pops out. You know, you do that the first time when you're feeling emotional, right? You're going to pop yourself in the face with the back of the rake, you know?
Oh, I like it, man. I like it.
So you did it for real, even though it was just a pallet. You get the idea of what's going to happen, what the tool's going to do when something actually gives.
I'm sitting here thinking in my head, I got some company training, some multi-company training coming up. I'm going to stick some pallets on the roof prop and have them rip them apart with the
brake stuff. It's the best.
Yes. Kevin Morgan said, I love being a student. This is a topic I've hit really hard as I've been confronted with obstacles where leadership and mentorship were the missing link in the chain. And he's talking about his class he teaches, I believe, about mentorship. Jacob Johnson says, of all the hundreds of priceless lessons you must teach a rookie over his first year, what do you feel is most important to teach and really drive home to set their path to success? That's a great question. I like it.
Yeah, no, I got it. I always say that, the biggest mistake a firefighter can do is to do nothing, right? We do things. We show up, we do things. And it sounds stupid and cliche, but if you're teaching the new firefighter, hang on, whoa, wait, let's have a look. No, do something, right? If you're wrong, we'll talk about it later. You know, the idea is you're supposed to teach them how to behave. You're supposed to teach them how to be a firefighter. And if you teach them to stand around or wait for somebody to tell them to do something, like you've ruined them for 30 years.
Love that. So you're saying initiative.
Yeah, initiative. Because what are we going to do wrong? Break something? I mean, that's 80% of what we do, and then the engines do whatever water thing. You know what I mean?
Yes, I love it. whatever water thing. We'll just watch them put the fire out from up above.
Look back. But like, look back, right? What the companies that you've seen that you respect, even, you know, engine companies, right? And I was guilty of this when I first went to an engine company as a boss. We show up someplace. It's a one-line fire. And it's already done before the second company gets there. We show up at the second company and we're parked down the street. So being a truckie, you're like, I don't want to haul stuff, right? The 35 is your ticket in the door. I'll get to that in a minute. But we showed up on the second new company and the chief looks over at us and I go, oh, we got the second line right there. You know, the first thing company is 2.5. We'll run that to backup if you need it, right? And I'm looking back now and I'm just like, oh, what an idiot, you know? Like, there's no way that chief would ever give me that fire. You know what I mean? If there was extension, there was no way you'd give it to me. Like you want me to give you work when you didn't show up ready? No way. You know, but do something. You're an engine company. Bring the water thingy. You know what I mean? And on the truck company, like we would show up as writ. And, you know, historically in Boston, right, if you can't throw the aerial, you bring a 35 because 35 gets 90% of our buildings. So we would bring a 35 in. We would bring our 35, right, because we knew we had it. Yeah, it sucks carrying the thing, but it's ours, and we can throw it up there, and everybody knows that it's ours. But when you're walking up and the chief is looking for somebody to put to work, that 35 is your ticket in the door, right? You bring that 35 up, hey, drop that, go inside, we need a search upstairs.
Nice.
Okay? And then whoever else shows up without a ladder, they can be writ. You know, but that was the way out of the writ penalty box, somebody said once.
The writ penalty box. I am writing that one.
But I bring a ladder in, and then I don't have to stand outside, done. Right, especially with the guys I had, like, because they didn't care, they all like worked out and stuff. So,
like it, love the answer, man. Jacob Johnson said, "Love it, great answer. It is a great answer. Initiative, man. Do something. Be ready. Do something. What are you going to do? Break something? I love that. truckies have to hold the hand of the engine guy so the fire goes out with a laughing emoji." here we go. Where do you fall on practice like you play? And crawl, walk, run as far as training goes.
I think, and we just talked about this the other day, every new skill becomes a checkoff item. You know what I mean? So every new skill that you spend, you know, minutes, hours, whatever, days trying to perfect, at some point that becomes done. Yeah. You know what I mean? It becomes something that you shouldn't have to spend all day doing again. And it's, you know, Yeah, we got to go slow when we're learning the first time. You know what I mean? If you're throwing it into something that we already do, like we're doing some new thing with our attendance or a taglines for Stokes Baskets, right? So we have a new thing. I don't even remember what it's called. Anyways, it involves a bowling, right? Which bowling is like my nemesis. I just can't figure it out. I don't know. But it involves a bowling. And they were like, hey, this is what we're doing now. And they showed the guys and it was like 5 minutes. And all of my guys were like, yeah, okay, all set. You know, and I'm like, bowling, right? Okay. So I'm still on the, like, learn the freaking bowling before I can learn to do it on.
Right, right. No, I'm with you. Ropes are my nemesis, so I completely understand.
But all the rest of my guys were like, oh, yeah, we're done. We got that. That's in now, you know, because it only took 5 minutes to add it to what they're doing.
What they're already.
So for me, I'm still back at the trying to do the bowling in my hand because I don't understand it. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. All the other knots make sense to me. I can tell you how the friction is working. I can tell you, you know, friction points and how much we're probably losing, you know, but bowling just doesn't work for me. So I'm stuck there and I can't move on to all these other things that they're just a checkoff for them because they're already running. You know, I don't believe we need to wear all of our equipment for everything. Right. Again, that's right back to crawl, walk, run. Right? Why do I have to put on all my gear to do this? Right. The first time I'm doing it, you know, I don't know what to be an example, even like SCBA, right. I found myself the other day trying to reconfigure how I have my mask hanging because I had to swing my ads at a thing and my mask got in the way because I didn't have my face piece on. So I hit my face piece and the thermal imager and my swing of the ads looked, I'll go with weak.
All right? Okay.
So something had to change.
Right.
You know, and do I need all of my gear on to do that? No, I just need my tank. Right. So I put the harness on and I'm trying it out. I don't like that. So I move it over here. I try it out. Right. And now when I put all my stuff on, I try it once, we're good, right? Because I tried it a bunch without all my stuff on. I don't need to try it with all of my stuff on to get the idea.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So I don't believe we need to use all of our gear for everything. Risk appropriate, I guess.
I like it. Like the answer. The one of the quotes that came from Facebook page when I was creeping around researching Sean Donovan and all the things you're involved in is, you cannot expect to practice soft and play hard. So,
yeah, it's one of those things where you create an environment for your training that's not realistic or doesn't transfer into the real world, you know. And one of the things that we do in our fire academy is you chop a railroad tie for I think it's 4 minutes, and then you got to throw a 35, you know. And that's one of like the clearing out checkoff items of the fire academy. And the idea is that you cut the roof. And, you know, we just want you good and tired when you throw the ladder. And what tends to happen is that your hands, your forearms are tired when you go to throw the ladder, right? So if we're just throwing ladders, we're good, no problem, right? But if you have to do any work associated with throwing the ladders, now you've lost your forearm strength. And it's mm-hmm. something that you won't know unless that's how you practice. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So there's a whole level of fatigue that comes in from using the same muscles repetitively that you're going to lose. And then when you try to do it in the real world, you're like, whoa, what the heck happened? Like, this right. just worked last time I practiced this. Like, well, did you practice it after climbing 9 sets of stairs? You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah, bite-sized pieces. But when you start pushing stuff together, you know, you got to get back to that realism. Like, what is this going to be like for real when I have to do this? Well, I'm not throwing the 35, but I got to carry it a block in before I throw it. And now, you know, one hand is useless. You
right.
know?
And let's find out here on the training ground rather than when someone's hanging out a window.
Right. Yeah. And then it goes back to how do you compensate for that, you know? And like the one person throw on the 35, you know what I mean? Yeah, you can cheat that as long as you got a, you know, a corner of the building you can space. Put the butt into, yeah. right? Do I need to throw it by myself? No, we have plenty of manpower. But I got two people that are doing it the way that I do it as one, then I'm good. You know what I mean? I know it works by myself, right?
Sure.
Now I'm tired. I can get somebody else. I'm doing the same, everything the same, but at, you know, half power, essentially.
Right on, right on. Loving it. You say you try to do each task three different ways. It's something you texted me when we were talking about discussion. So,
yeah, so the tech rescue stuff we're doing now, there's 1,000 right ways to do any of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes down to your personal preference and your, you know, I hate seeing the tool in the toolbox thing because it's stupid. You know?
Yeah, worn out. And like,
there's 100 tools in there you don't use. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. You just bought because it looked cool on TV. But there's, I want to try everything. So I think I sent you the pictures of the Jersey barrier,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, it's a Jersey barrier, right? How are you going to lift that? Well, three different ways. So I tell the guys when we get there, well, how are we going to do this? You know, I got three dudes. They're all coming up with a different way. And if they can't, then I got you. So we're going to do the pinch bars, airbags, and hydrofusion. You know what I mean? Do we need that? No, because the goal isn't about lifting the Jersey barrier, because I have zero doubt that they can do that. And I'm sure that they have 100 other ways to do it. You know, that's if the goal is not lifting the Jersey barrier, the goal is time on tools, you know, and that's what's missing, because we have guys that never had real jobs. No offense to anybody, but I did the same thing. I came from the military. I welded for a couple of years on semis, and then I got on the fire department, you know, so I had some other skills before I got on and I sucked at them. So I didn't have to build anything anymore. But there's guys that went from high school to the military and then pretty much straight to the fire department, and they don't have skills. You know, when I talk about those, the old guys that I worked with, they were all carpenters. Yeah. They all built stuff. They
remodeled, tear out. Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys were working 7 days a week, you know? So it's not about the three different ways. It's about, you know, what tool can we get involved in this, you know, and not just being stupid about it. You
right.
know?
Right.
This is the job we want to do. Right. What are some other ways we can do it? And it's the time on the tools, and it's finding things that don't work, because that's what I want to know.
Right on.
I know what works. Right. I'm not patting myself on the back, but there's a simple, stupid way to do everything. I want a better way. Right. And if I try to get a better way and it doesn't work, we're going to look really stupid when somebody's screaming. You know what I mean?
No, so absolutely. I'm gonna
try that and see.
Dude, I love that.
I love that.
Love that. Okay.
Okay.
Jacob Johnson asked, VES, OV work, or cut a hole? Have to choose one, and why? So this is one of those gun to your head things, but go.
Cut. Oh, my goodness. Because you can just keep cutting. You know what I mean? You're doing outside vent, which isn't really a spot for us. Boy, you smash a couple windows, and then what? You know what I mean? You cut the roof, you know, you make it look like a, you know, you're trying to put a swimming pool up there or something. You know what I mean? Like, the whole 4x4 hole, which is just stupidly small, right? Like, we start at 4x4. We keep cutting until the chief tells us to get off the roof. You know what I mean? Like, this, when there's no roof left, then we're properly vented. You know, outside vent, well, you smash a couple of windows, whoop-de-doo.
There you go. Dave LeBlanc chiming in, said, and when you have something that works, then use it. The rest is plan B. And you can have a plethora of plan Bs. And those ones, like you say, you identify what don't work.
Got a whole alphabet, you know?
Yeah. Those plan Xs can stay way down there.
Yeah.
Jacob Johnson chiming in. Oh, he's talking to Tyler Ponder. Said, you already missed 35 minutes of bombs. So there you go. lessons you have learned from instructing. Advice you would pass on to others who want to train or instruct.
Things I've learned instructing. Right back to no plan survives contact with the enemy. I would say that no instruction plan survives contact with the students. Because you don't know who you're going to get.
Right.
You know, we definitely ask the level first. And I'm going to say this and I'll tell you the story. But
okay.
Always ask what level the students are at before you start doing the stuff that your class involves.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say the part of the country we're in, but we're doing a live fire class in a Class B building. And, you know, we're motivating the students is the way I'm going to go. It was hot. And it was Class B, you know, burning propane or whatever. And the students are going really slow putting their masks on. And we're like, it's burning. Let's go. Like, do the thing, put the thing on, and let's go in the place. You know, come on. And they're going really slow. And like, all right, you know what? Like, I've had enough. So I pulled the face piece onto a student. Popped them in the face to get the air flowing, threw the hood up, threw the helmet on, let's go, right? And I dragged him in, and, you know, he flowed the water, and we shut the gas down and everything, come back out, and he goes, that's the first time I did that. I was like, oh, great, you know, I'm glad you could be here.
Yeah, he's not talking about the fire.
Yeah, he wasn't talking about the fire.
Gotcha.
He's talking about going on air. Yeah, he never had a face piece on before.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, time out. Where are we at here?
We're backing up. All right. No, that's great, man. That is great.
And then listen to the students, because if what you're selling them, and I say selling because that's what you're doing, you're trying to talk about your tactic or your whatever, right? If whatever you're giving them doesn't work where they are, like what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like ask, hey, what does work here? Or what have you tried but you can't get to do? You know, ask the students, you know, it's totally okay. Hey, if this is all junk and you're never going to get to do this, what do you get to do? Let's do that.
Right on.
You know, what are you going to get out of this? Because I want you to get something out of this. I don't want it to be a total waste of your time. I value people's time. You took your time out to come here. If this isn't for you, what is? What can we do?
Love it. Love it. And I, like you said at the beginning of the, was it Mike Tyson quote is what it made me think of, which is everybody, yeah. Everybody has a plan till you punch them in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I've only almost got punched in the face once, and it was my own fault.
That was awesome. How do you stay engaged and keep the passion burning? You got 19 years in, so I always like to ask this when guys have a long career, you know, under their belts already. How do you keep it going? How do you stay engaged? How do you keep the passion burning?
I honestly never imagined this job existed when I was growing up. I'm from a town of 30 people in the Midwest.
Okay.
We had a few volleys somewhere, but I think they were 15 miles away. I didn't know that this could be a job and you could actually do this. And this is so much fun. If I see something on TV, one of those cool 911 shows does, bro, we're trying that on Monday. You know what I mean? I can do whatever I want. I got half the city and I got guys that are willing to do it and a chain of command that I just have to apologize to, you know? So why not? You know? That looks cool. They crushed a car. Like I know a guy that owns a tow lot. Let's go over there and have him drop a car on top of another car and then throw concrete on top of it. Like, why not?
Right.
We can do that. But I don't understand how guys can be bored because we can do what almost whatever we want within reason, you know? And that reason, that you can push that too.
Yeah, sure. If you're bored at the firehouse, what do they say? If you're bored at the firehouse, you're doing it wrong. Is that what the...
Yeah,
the
but, and I worked with like guys who I had in the fire academy as recruits, and I see them 4 years later and they're salty old dogs that have done too much of this work already. You know, like, oh man, sucks to be you, huh? You got 30 years left of that. Right. Good luck to you. So I don't get it. I don't get it.
Best job I ever had, man. I love saying that. It's the best job I ever had. It's just so.
Oh yeah. When we go through office buildings, I'm like, yeah, we're going to take care of somebody for a medical call or something. But I'm like, you all should be jealous.
There's no doubt.
You're sitting in your little rabbit hole and you pop up and see what's going on. And then you go back down and start working on your computer again. I'm in my office doing payroll until like 9:30. And then I don't go back up there until after supper. There's nothing in there for me.
And then, and after that, you start breaking stuff.
That's right. As soon as we can.
So we got Tony Nunez said, minimum standards are like a map, just a guide for your around the world adventure. I do like that quote.
Yeah.
Too many people let their ego get in the way of thinking outside of the box and trying training on better methods. That's from David Pruitt, and he is not incorrect. No. Chad Small says, you'll get shot for this. Then he answers and says, nah, more like chewed out. I've been chewed out before.
Yeah, well, it's words.
Yeah.
I've got angry emails. I've gotten yelled at by chiefs. And like I make sure to always apologize for any safety infractions. And that's it.
All right, so I always like to ask guys, and you have a bookcase. I can see a bookcase behind you there. Oh, so good. I always like to ask guys if they have a book or books that they think firefighters should read. Does not have to be firefighter related, just books that you think firefighters should read.
There you go. Report from Engine 82. I think Report from Engine 82 is a great book. It was written in like 1972 or something. He's doing 9,000 runs a year in New York City. It's a great book. I love his insight on the population that he served to. That book spoke to me when I was working on Ladder 4. It was really good.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, there you go. Jacob Johnson said, my favorite book of all time. Sean Duffy said, minimum standards breed minimum results.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
I did have a quote I wanted to get out too.
Yeah, hit me.
When I first got yelled at by a chief for doing some training that was he determined to be unsafe. I scoured the internet. Dave LeBlanc helped me out with this quote from Bill Coates. He works for Divers Institute Technology in Seattle. This dude did like construction diving in Antarctica, and he teaches other people. So he says, to call what we do dangerous is to call us incompetent. We have risks involved in what we do, but we're trained to be excellent risk managers. Right. So I printed that out and put that on my locker, and that's like the only thing hanging on my locker.
Dude, I love that.
And that's what it is. Don't say that we're doing something dangerous. That's, you know, that's our jam. My guys would get mad at me if I didn't say that. So like danger is our jam. Like that's not dangerous. That's the office. You know what I mean?
That's not dangerous. That's the office. I love that. Perfect. All right. Now we have something we do on the weekly scrap every week, and it is the 5 questions for firefighters. Okay. And it's, the answers are completely your opinion, and the points are passed out by me and are completely arbitrary. So, Sean Donovan, are you ready for the 5 questions for firefighters?
For shizzle.
All right, here we go. What is the number one issue facing the modern fire service?
I'm going to go twofold. The risk avoidance, which I think we talked about, but that mentality up and down the chain. And I think Dave LeBlanc probably said it, because I always quote Dave LeBlanc because he's got the big mustache and the big brain. But you can't be afraid to say yes. You know, it's easy for a chief or somebody to say no, but saying yes is so much harder. Like, we have to say yes more, because the more we say no, the less that our guys are going to get out of this, mm-hmm. and the worse our department is going to become. And we're going to be one of those departments, not just us, but any department in general is going to turn into, well, that's not safe. I'm not going near that. You know, thank you for calling. We'll be here later, right? When everything's not dangerous, we'll come back, right? We just got to get away from that. And I think the other problem that I think with the fire service is blaming the next generation, which has been going on since there's been generations. You know what I mean? But my favorite thing is when somebody talks crap about millennials, right, who are like 30s now or something. Right. But so my first question is, who are their parents, right? Because their parents raised them. And then the second thing is, what did you teach them?
Right.
Right. Did you teach them anything, or did you just hate them because they're the generation that, well, if there's nothing going on, I'm not going to do anything.
Right.
Right. Okay. So, well, I got stuff for you to do, you know, and it's that whole mentality that, well, they're lost, they're gone, and well, they're still yours. They're still your problem. They're still your responsibility. They're still going to make your company look good or bad. So, you know, it's up to you how they act. You know,
I love the twofold answer. And I want to say this. It was a great answer. That quote that you said from Bill Coates. Sorry, I get it right. I don't want to take the time to stop and make you repeat it while I wrote it down. So I'm going to have you type that up and send it to me later. So I'm just saying that on record.
it's evidence now.
Great first answer. So you set the bar high right out the gate. Number two, what is the thing you are most excited about for the future of firefighting?
This is going to sound stupid and make me sound old, but battery technology. When I worked at rescue before, everything was gas powered and it lasts forever because you just kept putting gas in it. And the one electric powered thing we had, it failed under the flow of a sprinkler head. And so batteries were kind of turned me off for batteries when the thing shuts down, just because I have to use it underwater. And it generated the asshole question in me that whenever I go someplace and I see something battery powered, I always say, oh, how does it work underwater? And nobody wants to answer that one, you know. But stuff's come a long ways. We've got this little steel electric saw that we carry into any high rise, any type one building. And it's, you know, it's little thing, probably weighs 20 pounds, but we shredded a car with it in a nice basement with the sprinkler going off. Like, we cut the both side, the front and back hood off, right, the trunk and the hood off with it. And I think we ended up cutting a door open with it, right? It would get wet. We would take the battery off, shake it, slam it back in.
Go right back at it.
I was like, this is great. You know, I'm down there yelling in the sound of the sprinkler. And I'm like, this is freaking great. This is awesome. Like, let me have it. But I think like the battery technology is great. And then the optics, once thermal imagers get into the face pieces, like I know it's coming and I can't wait.
Awesome, man. No, technology is definitely, it's whether it's the real world or firefighting and our bleed over effect, but it's impressive what's coming. Hopefully we don't get inundated with having to figure out which ones work and which ones don't. Number three, best rank or position to be in the fire service.
I got to say the company officer on a good company.
I like that qualifier a lot,
but that's, that's the problem why I'm still a lieutenant, is because I've always been on good companies. I've always had good guys. I don't know if they weren't good guys, because it was always great when I was there. I never had any problems. It was great teamwork, and you know, they did the work. So I haven't had any motivation to move on, because I've never run into, like, you know, issues with the guys, the manpower. So I think, you know, the company is what you make it, right? Whether you're the new firefighter or the senior firefighter or the officer, it's what you make it. And I'm blessed to have just good dudes and good companies. So I think being the company officer in a good company where all you have to do is their paperwork once in a while, can't be beat. And I'm working now.
No, and I will say this, is that you said something that struck me there, which is, you've been on a lot of good cruises as the company officer where you don't want to leave them. You've been blessed, lucky. And I noticed this trend as I asked this question, because, A, the correct answer to that question is company officer. And so, of course, I pass out the points and it's completely your opinion. But I've always said that. But I love your qualifier of on a good company. But what I've noticed is this, is those good companies seem to all be under the same leadership, you know, the same company officer. And it's not – and I know – I'm trying to say this the right way. The humility shows through that allows them to be good company officers when they say, I've been blessed, I've been lucky, I've had these great guys. But it's not an accident that the same guy has been at the top of them, leading them over and over and over. You know, so anyway, I wanted to say that. It struck me. Great answer, sir. Number four, best advice you have ever received.
I accidentally said this at training the other day, and I realized I said it out loud. I said the quiet things out loud. But we're in a class, and the instructor said something about, oh, I learned one of my firefighters is a LARPer, live action role play.
Right on.
I go, oh, yeah, yeah, we have firefighters like that, too. They pretend to be firefighters, you know?
Nice.
So it's either a uniform or a costume for some people.
No doubt about it.
Some people pretend to be firefighters, some are.
A LARPer firefighter. I may have to steal that one and use it. I like it.
Go right ahead. I don't claim anything as my own. So,
all right. So number five, and I think I already know the answer just from discussing and texting with you, but heavy fire and searchable space, would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
So I'm going to say VES, even though that's not a flower that's historically grown in our garden. VES is new for us. And it's mostly because of the layout of our houses and neighborhoods. You can get like 90% of the rooms in a three family from either front steps or back steps. So VES hasn't really been a thing in our department, but I would definitely say that over whatever the other thing is.
The little water thingy that.
Yeah, we got 33 engine companies. So, you know, whatever. We have plenty of people to do that work.
Fair enough. There it is. The five questions for firefighters, according to Sean Donovan. Very good, sir. Very good. Best place to contact you, book a class, reach out, get information.
Donnie at Hotmail. DONN_EE at Hotmail.
There it is. Anything you have coming up? Anything you want to talk about, discuss, anything at all like that?
I think it's just FDIC. And I feel like there's something else. Oh, no, I'm going to take the Heavy Rescue Conference in Syracuse right after FDIC. So that'll be fun.
I also need to meet you.
Teaching and taking, and I think that's the best way to do it.
Dude, the taking, I love catching classes. There's so many good instructors out there.
Oh, it's great. You learn something. You get to work with dudes. I enjoy taking the classes because it's also low stress.
No, absolutely. So perfect. Who's coming up? So on the scrap coming up, I'm getting ready to fly to Florida here in a couple days to go to the North Florida Fire Expo. Super excited about that. Mike Gagliano, I know is the keynote. Sean Duffy's going to be out there. Nick Depard. I'm going to quit saying names because I'm going to leave people out, and I don't want to do that. So I'm excited for that. I'm always looking for challenge coins to put in the flag case. I realize this is the first scrap where I left my closet door open instead of putting the flag over it. So you get that kind of – anyway. if you have a challenge coin, you want me to feature it and put it in the case, send it to me. Reach out, and I'll tell you where to get it. Other than that, guests coming up. Sean Donovan was today, March 1st, kicking off March in a good way. Jake Barnes is next week on the 8th when we get back from Florida, followed by Dr. David Griffin, followed by Jeremy Dunch of National Fire Radio, and then closing out March, Bill Carey. So a phenomenal March is on the way for the scrap. So Sean Donovan, thank you for being a phenomenal guest today, sir.
Thank you for having me.
It was a lot of fun. And for all the audience, thank you for the comments, the questions. And I hope the tone stays silent. Unless it's burning, stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.